I'm Greg Johnson. Welcome to Counter Currents Radio. I'm going to be joined shortly by my co-host, David Zutty. We are going to be joined by Tyler Dykes, who is running for the U.S. Congress in the state of South Carolina. He's also a former J6 political prisoner. David, do you want to do the introduction here? Because you're more familiar with Tyler and his work than I am.
Yeah, so Tyler Dykes is running for office in South Carolina for Congress. He is a January 6th political prisoner, a Marine veteran, and he is fighting the establishment. He's fighting the Uniparty, and I'm happy to have him on.
Thank you for having me.
How was your event today?
Fantastic. Actually, the whole thing was just great. So I've come up to Charleston. I just got to be able to speak to a really great crowd of people, and it was great. And in fact, it was interesting. It was a bit of a mixture of a crowd, a little bit liberal, a little bit conservative. And so I just said, hey, I'm here to fight for every American that wants us to actually care about America and the American people, not all these foreign politicians, not all these, you know, foreign wars and conflicts. So that's been my message from day one. And I'm really excited to actually be able to have this opportunity to be able to replace the retiring Nancy Mace in U.S. Congress here.
That's great to hear. I assume you're heavily opposed to China buying up farmland and all that and basically taking over schools on that, because it seems like everyone is trying to colonize America. We have multiple powers like Israel, China, India, Russia, just trying to get their finger in the pot and exploit it, and we have to say no. I think we're almost like Italy during the Renaissance, where Italy was the playground of France, Spain, other powers. And that's actually what made Machiavelli write his whole Prince, was he wasn't trying to make praising evil. He was trying to tell a prince, you can act like an ancient Roman, be kind of hardcore, and get Italy, make Italy great again, make Italy Roman again. And we're just completely being plundered like Italy was during Machiavelli's time. But hey, Italy came back, so can we.
Tell us a bit about your background and why you decided to get involved in politics. Can you just give us a brief story, just so we can put you in context?
Of course. So the big thing with me is that, you know, I grew up in sort of like an upper middle class family in the suburbs of Charlotte, North Carolina. And I just, you know, I didn't have any ideas about political aspirations or connecting with anybody or about any of these different kind of things. I just thought, you know, America's America. We got to love America. Everything's good. And then you get out and you explore the world and you realize just how wrong that is. So, for example, I got a scholarship to UNC Chapel Hill, where I was able to go on a gap year fellowship to be able to see the world. But in order to accept that fellowship, I had to basically talk about how horrible that white people were and say that I had privilege and I had to hate myself because of my gender, my sexual orientation, because of my race. And that was like a prerequisite to be able to have this scholarship. So I said no, I did it on my own. I went to Europe. And this was in 2016, right around the time when Trump was first starting to run. And I saw the devastation of mass immigration all over Europe. Madrid, Seville, Barcelona, Lisbon, Granada, London, everywhere. Berlin, every single country in all of Western Europe has just been flooded with foreigners. And I got back home and I thought, you know what? That was a really horrible thing to be able to see all of this destruction of the culture. And then right here at home, the exact same thing is happening. And here's President Trump. He's running for office for the first time. He's going to fix these exact things. And so I supported him. I supported him for a long time. I fought against the statues being removed, the Confederate statues of the South. I fought to preserve our heritage and our culture. And then comes January 6th rolls around. By this point, I had already joined the United States Marine Corps. I had already become a Marine and got all of that discipline and experience, and then comes around January 6th. During January 6th, I went up to the Capitol. I wanted to protest against all this election interference that was happening, all of these irregularities with dead people voting and everything else. So I wanted a recount. I went there. Later on, I would end up getting charged, arrested, go to prison, and I got pardoned. And since then, I have been fighting for those ideals that Trump ran on in 2024 for office and fighting in politics ever since.
That's great to hear. And I'm really glad that you turned around. I have a friend who is a January 6th, or he wrote a book actually. And I think one of the only ways we can really prevent anarcho-tyranny from happening in the future is by making it backfire. They're going to keep doing it. Like, I got involved in politics because in part because I was doxxed and I decided to throw it in their face. And I think if it, at some point we just can't, we might as well just make lemons and lemonade. So I'm very glad that you're doing that and imposing an opportunity cost on them for their anarcho-tyranny. That's great to hear. And it is they don't learn from history. They're very high off their own supply and don't seem to understand that when the Soviet Union used hard power, it backfired. Like, look at Orban Viktor. He started out being, you know, body slammed or having or choked out by the commies, and then, well, that made him a hero and a martyr long term. Yeah. So these things I do hope backfire more and more.
Yeah, I agree. And that's one of the things that's really so stupid about the doxing and then losing the jobs and attacking people's friends and family who are on the right. Because at that point, you pretty much strip away every single reason for someone not to get involved, for them not to fight back. And so, I mean, I think that it's already beginning to backfire. We're seeing so many people running for office, so many actual America First people that want to change. And so, yeah, they did it to me. They doxed me. They attacked me. They threw me in prison. They branded me with all of these things. Well, guess what? Now I've got nothing to lose. What are you going to call me that you haven't already called me? What are you going to do to my business you haven't already done? What are you going to do to the friends and family that I haven't already lost? You can't touch me. You can't do anything to me. And you have nothing that you can say about me that is new. That is what makes my campaign especially so powerful, because all my so-called skeletons, they're not in the closet. They're out in the middle of the street for everyone to see. And so there's nothing I have to lose for actually telling the truth. And that's sort of what I really prioritize myself on for these issues.
Nice. Do you want to talk about some of the other candidates in particular, or do you want to just kind of brush past them? Are there ones that are kind of like particularly dirty or obnoxious or have their own skeletons or are globalist or?
Yes. The only candidate that I'm going to point out is the person that has the entire backing of the establishment. That man is Mark Smith. He prides himself on working with dead bodies on the regular at his mortuaries. He works with all these like corpses all the time. And that's exactly what his political career is going to be, dead. Because that man, I cannot stand him. He goes around talking about he's proof the American dream is working because he grew up poor and he's 70 years old and he's a multimillionaire and has all this wealth and power. So we don't need to change anything. We don't need to try to make anything better. That's his message. That is literally his advertised message of he says he will not change anything because things are great. I don't know about you, but I go down to the gas pump and I see almost $5 a gallon. I go and I check my statements every month and see how $2,000 a month is just dying for rent, for mortgage, for all this other stuff that people have to pay. We don't have money. What do you mean things are going well? They're not going well. And so he's actually a big reason I'm even running in this race in particular, because I absolutely despise that message. We need change and we need it now. And so that's a big reason for why I'm running.
Well, I assume he's not going to get the youth vote because everyone under 40 knows that they could not take the same path. That path that he took, whatever it was, has been closed off or made unreasonably difficult. And you can't really get, you're not going to become a millionaire by skipping Starbucks. Like, that's a cope I hear a lot, and no, it's not going to work. The math does not add up.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And then the bigger thing, though, is that this area is such a big retirement community and is so overwhelmingly in the older generations that it will hugely depend on turnout and who actually shows up to vote. That'll matter a lot. Like, it's actually pretty similar to Thomas Massey's district, actually. And so we can really, really get the youth turnout. We can overcome a lot of these things with a lot of different demographics. But also, the older generations are actually starting to get behind me. I have some wonderful, amazing people that are helping support me, and they're all older Gen X and boomers that see the truth about foreign influence, that see the truth about mass immigration, about wanting to bring home the troops, about all this other stuff. And so even though this really is like a 55 and up area, almost exclusively, not exclusively, but almost, I really do think I stand a great chance to win this thing because of how many minds are changing on these topics.
Is the cat out of the bag? Do you think about how immigrants are not going to pay your pension? They're going to basically suck up all your pension money, and they can do little financial tricks like, oh, Social Security is going to lockbox. But at some point, it's money in, money out, and they consume much more welfare than they use. That's why I'm from California, and that's why the court struck down Prop 187, which would have denied non-emergency services, is because they know that despite providing cheap labor, they're all in these free services that supplement their income that we usually don't get unless we are living in it, almost basically living in a tent.
Yeah, those are huge issues. Like you said, I mean, we have all these foreigners that are living here that are just draining away the resources. Two-thirds of non-citizens in this country are on some form of welfare. Why is it that more foreigners are using our benefits than American citizens? Why is it that we are being looted so much? Why is it that we're talking about Social Security becoming insolvent? People have been paying into it their entire lives, and yet we can't fund our own old people. No, we have to fund the entire world's retirees. We have to pay for their salaries and for their pensions. That is what I am really opposed to. And so we have plenty of money here in this country if we would just stop giving it away to people that were not American citizens. And people are waking up to that. God bless. Thank the Lord. People are finally coming around to that fact, and they're getting off the Fox News and the CNN circuit, and they're actually starting to find out the truth for themselves. For when I'm out here and speaking to a lot of these demographics, most of them have never even heard in their life someone in real life say the things that I'm saying. So this campaign alone, win or lose, I am making a difference here for the community.
That's great. We really dominate online spaces, but yes, you might be the first person that any of these people have seen actually say this in real life. And I've had experiences over the years where I've talked about our sorts of issues, let's just put it that way, in a sort of gingerly way. I'll bring it up in some context. And I'm surprised at the number of people who actually are receptive to these things. And they've never talked about it. They've never felt it was safe to talk about it. But a lot of people are looking and learning and drawing conclusions. But as long as it can be kept bottled up online, it's not going to produce real political change. You've got to have people who take it offline into the real world. So have you had experiences where you've talked to people and they've said, well, you're literally the first person I've ever heard say this, but good on you, because I've been thinking this for a long time?
Yes, I have absolutely had those experiences. And then I've also absolutely had the experiences of someone coming up to me who's, you know, 75, 80 years old and practically yelling at me saying, I've never heard anyone say anything like this before. You're just a hateful bigot. And they're like at a Republican Party event. And so I've had it all. I've had people say they've never heard it and they hate me for it. They've never heard it and they love me for it. And that they never heard it and that they don't really know what to think. And so they're going to go do research. So it really is just so important to get off the online space. Everyone who's online pretty much already knows the truth about a lot of these issues. But the thing is that if you're all online, then you'll be too afraid to tell anyone in your daily life. You'll be too afraid to say something at work, at school, with your friends, with your family. And if you're too afraid to say anything, you're never going to take power in this country. And so there's a huge amount of support here, much larger than any of the polls are suggesting, simply because so many people are afraid to actually voice their thoughts out loud. And so when people come out in public, when people go out and proudly say, I am an American, I stand for the American people only, not foreign interests, that really catches people's attention. And I think sort of breaks the spell, sort of breaks the mental block that's stopping them from admitting to themselves what they believe.
It also defeats the bad faith argument that we're just trolls or bots or whatever, because that's a way that people who don't want to debate us, they've gone from calling us nasty words to saying that these are just like random people in their basement, if they're people at all, maybe they're robot. No, we're actually very nice people and we do exist. And
or they're Indian scammers or something like that. Tyler, I spent a lot of time in South Carolina. I have friends in South Carolina. I've got relatives there. It's a great state. It's got a great history. And so what explains the long, long career of Lindsey Graham? Isn't it time for the people of South Carolina to put him out to pasture? And how has he hung around so long? He's just a terrible, terrible political figure. And I think he probably spends, and he would probably admit this proudly, he spends more time on junkets to Israel than he does in his actual home state. What explains his ability to hold on?
Where they're planning the wars of the future, according to some guy, too.
Yes. No, and I have to be very careful with how I say this, actually, because the reason that he has managed to stay in office is because of how ridiculously powerful that he is and how much of a potential ability he has to silence people that disagree with him. I have heard from people potentially that mentioned about various different kinds of lawsuits that have been brought up, about different kinds of money for getting different things that may or may not be related to Lindsey Graham. And so the simple fact of the matter is that when you have so many millions of dollars, when you have so much influence, it's easy almost for them to knock people off the ballots. When one person, for example, Mark Lynch, is almost completely incapable of getting media time, and then you have Lindsey Graham is on the news every single day out there getting free media, and then he's spending $10 million in advertising, it's very, very difficult to keep up. And the average person is a very low information voter. The average person is not doing hours and hours of research on who the candidates are. What it comes down to more than anything else is name recognition. That is what wins most races more than anything else. And Lindsey Graham has it. He's cultivated it for a very long time. He has strong connections to the media, the military apparatus, to all these different levers of influence. And pretty much the entire establishment, every single Republican group that is like adjacent to the main Republican Party, support him. And they won't even platform people like Mark Lynch, who's running against them. They won't even allow him to come speak at their events. Like Mark, I know him personally in a lot of ways. I've met him at a number of events. He's been blacklisted from the majority of the Republican Party county parties. He can't speak. And so when you have, on the one hand, someone that you've heard a million times, even if you disagree with him, and someone you've never heard of, you're most likely going to vote for the person that you sort of know. And that's the big problem here in South Carolina, is that establishment level of control they have. And that's why grassroots support and grassroots door knocking is so important, because that's the only thing that can overcome their money and power.
That's really interesting. Are you seeing younger people with more based opinions infiltrating the party and volunteering for things, getting involved in organizations? And do you think that that might actually lead to a change in time?
I think that just about every single person under 40 working politics right now has watched Nick Fuentes openly and has told me things like this before. Like 99% of people might say that. Not all of them, of course. There are a lot of them that don't. But there are people in my opponent's campaigns, people that work for Mark Smith, that work for some of the other people that are running against me, where they come over and start talking to me and basically tell me that they like me more, but they already signed a non-compete and they can't work for me. Like, that they watched all these different shows and different networks. And, you know, regardless of what your opinion is on the guy, there's a lot of influence. There's a lot of stuff that is changing out there. So, yeah, I'd say the youth is united of all races. There's a lot of young black men that I've met that are very much so opposed to foreign wars and to immigration. I mean, it's shocking. It is across the board, male, female, whatever race, whatever beliefs, the youth is almost completely unanimous with what they want. No more wars, no more foreign influence, make the economy better. That is what everybody wants and everyone is saying. So it's been a huge, huge change for the better, I think.
So what are your opinions of people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, and also, I guess, Rand Paul? And are there other people in politics today that you look favorably upon?
Thomas Massie, good luck. I'm rooting for you. I fully endorse and support Thomas Massie. I really, really hope he wins his primary here in the next, I think it's a week or so, or next Tuesday even. I'm not sure. So, yeah. I like Thomas Massie. I like Marjorie Taylor Greene a lot, Rand Paul. And I think that they've been really putting up a great fight against AIPAC, against foreign influence, against all these different people that are trying to ruin our country, against the Epstein class. And, you know, I'm actually really disappointed that Marjorie dropped out, that she's no longer staying in. Unfortunately, when you're in dissident politics, when you're in the politics that is not in power, that seeks to disrupt the power structure, you have to be prepared. You have to be ready for the death threats, for the attacks on your family and friends. You have to be prepared for them to shut your bank account down like they did to me, to even be charged with things like Trump and myself that are stupid charges just to try to say that you're a felon and then you're not. And so it's just ridiculous the level of insane things they'll do to try to shut you down. And I really wish that Marjorie had stayed in. I get why she didn't, but I really wish she had. So, but still, I love her. I love Thomas Massie. And I really love the way that they're in the house trying to fight. So my big thing is we need reinforcements. We need people that are willing to go in, speak the truth, and actually work as a block to get things done.
That's excellent. And I don't think we've seen the last of MTG. I think she's going to come back, and I'm excited for that. But what were some major political influences on you, like thinkers and all that? Political thinkers like Patrick Buchanan and Coulter.
I wouldn't say I've read a whole lot of their stuff. More, I just love like American history. I love a lot of the philosophers and, you know, about the freedom, about liberty, about the American people, about fighting for what's right for America, about, you know, even a lot of the different philosophies on war. You've got Clausewitz on war, his whole philosophy there that war is just an extension of politics. Politics is just war by peace. It's all these things just come together and really tell me that we have to fight for our country. That's my belief. I'm not like this grand intellectual. I'm not this guy that's out here studying all these different, you know, Aristotle and Shakespeare. I'm the action guy, right? I'm the guy who's going to go out there and get things done. And so what really guides me in my philosophy and my thinking is really quite binary. Whatever is good for the people of this country, for the American people, must be done uncompromisingly. And whatever is bad, whatever hurts the American people, must be opposed no matter how powerful the people it is that you're going against. And, you know, I think I got a lot of that also from my Marine Corps experience, from the discipline that I gained when I was in the Marines. That experience, going through boot camp, going through all of the MOS training, going through in my station, my duty station where I spent most of my time, all of this has really guided my beliefs more than anything else. And so that's what I would say is my main guideline.
Sounds awesome. Friend enemy distinction all the way.
Yeah. So can I ask you about some other people? We love to play, you know, political fantasy football type scenarios, think about who might be running for particular offices down the road. What do you think of Tucker Carlson as a potential political candidate, perhaps a presidential candidate in the future?
Hey, if Tucker is ever on the ballot, I'm voting for him. Doesn't matter what it's for. If he's running for county treasurer of my county, I'm voting for him. Like, yes. But no, I think he'd be a very viable political candidate. I also think, though, that it's very, very, very difficult to run for an office like president without massive amounts of financial supports, without massive amounts of aid. So I wonder almost if he even is reluctant to get into that high of a fight, or if he just wants to support someone else that runs for that. I don't know, but I would support him, that's for sure. I remember getting home from like high school, my parents would put on Fox News, and the only thing that they would watch in Fox would be Tucker. And when Tucker left Fox, they never watched Fox again, I don't think. They just stopped. And so that's the big thing. It's like he's been almost like an influence in my life for decades at this point. And he really says a lot of things that people are unwilling to talk about. Where he had that investigative reporter, Tyler Oliveira, that investigated like a lot of the Hasidic communities for welfare fraud. He's one of the only people that is prominent in talking about so many of the issues that people are afraid to touch. And I support him, and I really hope that he considers supporting my campaign as well.
Well, that'd be great. I hope you're on his show sometime soon. Are there other candidates like yourself that are out there that we should be looking at and following?
Yeah, there are a lot of people. There's a lot of different America First candidates that are running, and we're all really starting to network already and begin sort of the caucus beforehand. There's like a group of like 10 to 15 America First candidates all across the country, where if all of us win, we will make a tidal wave of a splash and a difference in federal Congress. Because, you know, one person winning is not going to do anything. Right. One person getting in office. We've seen what it is with Thomas Massie and his run and everything he's trying to do. He's great. He's achieving a lot, but you can't go up against 500 other people alone. And so there's a lot of people that are running in Louisiana, Alabama, Tennessee, all over the place, especially the South, that are really fighting for America First. I need to check in with some of them, make sure I can name drop all of them. They'd be okay with that. But we are beginning to network. We are beginning to caucus together. So that should, even just a few of us get in, we can actually make a difference.
Yeah, that's very, very encouraging. I'm glad to hear that. One person who I was hoping would get into the House in Washington State a few years back was Joe Kent. And then he got appointed to a position in the Trump administration, counterterrorism position. And he resigned at the beginning of the Iran war for, I think, all the right reasons. I really give him a lot of credit, and I hope that he comes back into politics because I would really like to see him running for office again. Have you followed any of his career?
Yes, actually. I've seen a lot of the stuff that he was doing, and I support ultimately his decision. If you don't want to support a foreign involvement in a foreign conflict, and your job is pretty much to support America in those foreign conflicts, that's a conflict of interest. And so if he felt conflicted, he had to leave. And if he were to run, I would support him. So yeah, I would support him. I like what he's doing. And I'm never going to counter signal or go against anybody that is speaking out and telling the truth about these issues. Like, I'm not even going to go out there and insult Ro Khanna on some of his egregious policies on immigration that are absolutely horrible because of how good of a job he did fighting against the Epstein, fighting to get the Epstein files released, and things like that. So I think we really just need people that are willing to fight back against foreign influence more than anything. And then once we've dealt with that issue, once we have dealt with corruption in our country, then we can have a discussion about what's good for America.
Mm-hmm. I agree about Ro Khanna. I think he was making absolutely deadly, accurate, very courageous stands and statements connected with Epstein, and I appreciated that a lot. So I applaud him to that extent. I think he's doing really good things. So you're running in a district that had Nancy Mace in the House of Representatives. And whenever I think of Nancy Mace, I think of the internet meme about how girls or women take pictures of something. And it's always them in the foreground and the thing they're taking a picture of in the background. She's getting out of politics. Actually, this is news to me. I did not know that she was retiring. What's the story there about Nancy Mace stepping down?
Well, she's not completely leaving politics at all, really. She's retiring from being a congressman, and she's leaving her seat, vacating it, so she can run for governor, actually, of South Carolina. And that's a big... Right now, I think she's polling at about third. There's all this talk with the redistricting of... there are rumors that, like, Governor McMaster is trying to get the Trump endorsement for Lieutenant Governor Pamela Evatt, who's also running for governor. And so there's all this stuff going on, all this crazy stuff. And so the big thing with her is she's trying to get her way into more power. But one thing I really respect and like about her, actually, or I guess not necessarily like, but respect, is she's always been an early adapter of any kind of, like, mainstream thought, right? Like, and it can be bad and it can be good. One of the ways it can be bad, for example, is when all of the leftist craziness happened with LGBT. I remember specifically for South Carolina, Nancy Mace was one of the very first people to come out and be like, I love gay people, I love trans people, they're amazing. She was one of the very first people to say that in this state. It was insane. But then when it started to become unpopular again, when people started to turn against transgenderism and homosexual marriage, she was also one of the first people to suddenly come out all of a sudden and say, no, marriage is between a man and a woman. You know, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And she started saying all this stuff as well. And so ultimately, what I think that Nancy Mace is she is someone who really has her finger on the pulse of the American people. And that's good to have leaders like that, even if they have zero principles, because that means you know what you need in order to change the way they govern, to change the way they act. You just need to get the American people behind you. You need to change the hearts and minds of the people, and then they'll shift. So she will never be an establishment person. She will never be a great tool for the establishment because she is too smart and bends too easily for the will of the people. And so I think she could potentially make a great governor because of that.
Well, that's actually a very nice take on her. You're saying that she's not an establishment person. She follows the will of the people. Well, that's really what a good politician should be doing. And, you know, I was having a conversation with some friends in Ireland just the other day, and we were talking about politics, and they were talking about how there are people who are sort of defecting from the center right to the more nationalist right. And I said, well, this is a great sign. This is a great sign because you can't win an election with just the principled people, yes. Right? You're going to need a majority, and the majority is not principled. But when you start seeing people who are unprincipled and are following where they think the power is coming in your direction, that's yes. a really positive sign.
Exactly. That is huge. And ultimately, I do think that is why Nancy Mace put her name down on the Epstein petition. And even though she got a lot of attacks from it, she got attacked by, I think, even President Trump himself directly attacked her for doing that and tried to bankroll her opponents. She got so much flack for that. But she was like, no, I see where the wind is going. I'm not standing with the people with Epstein. Once you start having these big names that are just out for personal power coming to our side, that is great. And another thing that's really interesting as well is, and I don't even know really if I should say it, but it's just odd, is seeing a lot of these like OnlyFans creators and a lot of these like young women that are trying to market their bodies and take pictures. They're coming out with like MAGA hats on to advertise their OnlyFans. Like, that is insane. Those used to be exclusively communists that used to be in those kind of places. And now they're like, you know, come subscribe to my OnlyFans. I'm the nude MAGA girl. Like, that is an insane shift. Because, like, young women especially are all about status. They will only ever bend where the majority, like, the power is. So for these people to be coming over to the more nationalist side of things is a great, great sign. I don't want them to have any power in the movement. I don't want them to influence anything. But that is a yeah. great sign.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's exactly right. You don't want them to have power because they're unprincipled and opportunistic. But they're a great sign of, well, they see where the power and opportunity lies now, and it's something to be welcomed.
Might be better than a scientific poll, but I do polling for the Homeland Institute, so maybe I should start polling Instagram girls. But this is a great white pill because there's an ongoing battle in political theory on our side about, like, is it elite theory or popular theory of power? And the elite theory says, well, no, it's all downhill. And they always poo-poo people who, like me, who are a little bit more optimistic and say, no, sometimes culture isn't downstream from politics. Sometimes politics is, in fact, downstream from culture. We change the culture, we change the politics. And that's easier said than done, but yes, it is happening. So that's good to hear. That is more evidence in my running debate about this subject. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, things are just really moving in the right direction everywhere in every country right now, at least for actually making a change.
So how do people in South Carolina who want to support you find out about you? Do you have a website? Are you on particular social media platforms? How do people get involved?
Yes, I am on just about every social media platform, I think, as like Dykes for Congress. That's my last name, D-Y-K-E-S, the number 4, Congress. And if you want to come and see a bit more about my information, about what I believe, my platform, go to votetylersc.com. That's my website. VOTETYLERSC.com. SC is in South Carolina. And the best way for people to support me across the whole nation, just Americans, I can only accept donations from Americans, please help contribute to my campaign. Over in the past few days, I think we've raised something like $3,000 so far this week. It has been amazing. The grassroots support that has come out in support of my campaign is amazing. So if you want to get on the bandwagon, if you want to help me buy more signs, do more phone calls, mass email marketing, we've got door knocker teams now. We are really fighting back against all the money and power that the mortuary guy Mark Smith has. We're really going and combating him directly. So please, if you can, visit votetylersc.com and contribute and volunteer to help. That would really make the world to me. Please, and thank you.
Would you say that your money goes a lot further than the establishment money?
Oh, so much further.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys have millions of dollars, and they're just throwing it away. They're doing, you know, YouTube, Facebook ads, X ads, Twitter, and then they're also doing, like, radio, and then they're doing all these different medias. And then you go and you listen to what they have to say, and it's just boring. No one's going to vote for you because of these bad ads where they're like, hello, I'm Mr. Conservative. I'm going to cut your taxes by 3%. Vote for me. And everybody sees it, and they put $1 million into that campaign, and no one votes for them. And versus for mine, I do everything targeted. I put signs up in specific communities. I do emails to specific donors, to specific volunteers, to specific groups of people. And then I go out and I organize the grassroots to do door knocking. That is the greatest way to be able to cheaply get things done, to be able to get votes. So I'd say that I'm probably anywhere from 10 to 50 times more effective per dollar than my opponents. So every dollar goes a long way.
Yeah, I did. Someone did the math recently about the recent primary between Casey Push and Vivek. And Vivek was spending a lot of money. And while he won, Casey Push only got 20%. It was an insane ratio of how much each vote basically cost for each candidate. It sounded like an ancient battle between Greeks and Persians. It went a lot further than Vivek's.
Well, I think Vivek spent like $10 a vote or something like that. He spent a huge amount of money, and Casey Putsch, you know, probably spent 2 cents per vote. So that's very encouraging. That they have to just throw money at this stuff to get their way. I'm sad that obviously Vivek won the nomination. I'm very, very tired of these terrible candidates that Trump endorses. And this goes way back, you know, Herschel Walker, Dr. Oz, people like that, Vivek. And also the terrible vindictiveness that he's displayed towards people who are objectively very good and very principled, and that would include somebody like Jeff Sessions, also somebody like Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene, Nancy Mace in this particular case, connected with Epstein and so forth. He's just got terrible political instincts, and it basically just all revolves around himself. If somebody flatters him, he's for them. If somebody stands up against him, well, you should admire that as a sign of character and principle, but that seems to mean nothing to Trump. He just wants to destroy them, which is very, very unfortunate. I do think, though, that there's a genius, I forget who said this. This was the day after Hillary Clinton went down to defeat. It was on X, Twitter, back in the Twitter days. Somebody tweeted out, imagine having all of Hollywood and all the media and all this big money and academia, all the leading cultural institutions on your side and still losing.
Yes.
And I thought, yeah, that really sums it up. These people have enormous advantages, and so do the MAGA Inc. people, enormous advantages, but they don't have truth, they don't have the youth, and they can keep throwing money at these problems, but they're eventually going to lose. Whereas people who are armed with the truth and with good character and honorable behavior, they're fighting a very, very uphill battle. But yes, I honestly think that in the long run, it's these things that win out over money. I'm just glad to see people actually coming forward and doing this.
Yeah. And I thank you for, you know, I think you guys follow me and support me. And so thank you for that. I do sort of want to push back a little bit regarding Trump's endorsements coming directly from him. I actually have insider people that give me little details. I don't, you know, that is legal for them in slipping past. And they've basically indicated that it's not Trump that's making the decisions for these endorsements, that they actually come from his endorsement pack, which is run by Susie Wiles. She is the one that makes the endorsements, and he goes along with it because she helps fundraise and get him money. And so it is personal for him when these people go up against him, go up against the pack and his endorsees, because that's where essentially his campaign and all the money comes from.
Mm-hmm. And well, the instincts of people like Susie Wiles are all wrong, unfortunately. I think she represents very conventional Republican games, little Republican tricks, you know, like, oh, let's find a person of color or maybe a transsexual who believes in tax cuts for billionaires and a strong foreign policy. This is how we get Caitlyn Jenner being floated to run for for office as a Republican. They want to push a certain stale mainstream Republican platform, and they completely surrender to the cultural hegemony of the left. And so they think, well, you know, we can outflank them by having even more diverse candidates on our side, one of every color, one of every creed. We can out intersectionalize them and still get our tax cuts through. And a lot of this just fizzles in especially heavily white and conservative constituencies. They just can't be bothered to drag themselves out to vote for some of these historic, diverse, first American affirmative action candidates that the Republicans are putting up.
One of the dumbest things she said back in the, I think, 2024 election was like, for every Karen we lose, we're going to get a Jamal and an Enrique. Those are her words, not mine. And it's like, no, that's not going to happen. That's the dumb idea. And also, she and Trump should know better, because we saw Trump prove that running on immigration works. That's how he won 2016. So it's like, why abandon a winning strategy? He was cooed in 2024 because he was 1 week on immigration, and two, there was a lot of fraud and intimidation. And it's like he completely forgot the lesson of 2016, which is just be based on immigration, you'll win, because that's what people want, but they're never given a real option on that.
Yeah, and it's been worse. You have a lot of these candidates, like here's in Virginia, for example, which is not good. Like, not only if you stay with your convictions, right, after you get in office, the people will continue to support you. I don't know why this, I mean, I do know why, it's foreign money, but I don't know why so many people in this administration are trying to act like, oh, we have to moderate, we can't do deportations, people are getting too upset about it. No, you won in a historic, like almost landslide, by saying build the wall, deport them all. That is what won the election. And so I think people are sick and tired of seeing candidates that are just wishy-washy and not committed to anything. And people of all races want to see somebody that is principled. Like, I even have people where I call out the Iran war and I'm opposed to the action in Venezuela. And so because I stood by my principles in something that they disagree on, they're more likely to like me and to follow me on the things they do agree on. And it's so important. And so many politicians are just cowards where they don't understand that. So I think we really need to push through that more.
Yeah, someone's always like flip-flopping, trying to take them seriously. And we see this all the time with mainstream candidates. And they got away with this in the past, I think, because a newspaper and mass media, TV, which I think TV is one of the most destructive technologies ever created, more than smartphones. But now we have the internet, and we can basically A-log them, or basically monitor them in real time and have updates and compile receipts and then blast it back in their face and hit them up in the comment section. And there's no newspaper editor, even with algorithm manipulation, there's no newspaper editor who can basically say, no, you can't comment on that stupid thing they said, saying that, no, they said this on immigration two months ago, and they're flip-flopping. It's all in real time. And a lot of people who are establishment kind of rhino Republicans, they still think they have TV. And it's like, no, you have the internet. We see the emperor has no clothes. And they cannot stop making fools of themselves. They have not created any alternative except for maybe creating bot farms or manipulating algorithms, shadow banning, censorship. And when they do that, oftentimes that implodes because everyone knows about it. Like, even on X, like, I really appreciate Elon Musk, what he's done. But everyone knows that there's shadow banning and algorithm manipulation that's not always in our favor. That's not truly free speech. There's some editorial input there, but people realize that. And it is kind of undermining Elon's credibility, even though I do like him a lot.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that. I mean, I've gained thousands of followers over the past month or so. But ever since these new algorithm changes, I've been getting like 10% of the views that I did before I got all the follows. And so I don't know what's going on, if it's targeting just people that are more conservative or nationalist in general, or if there's still a little bit left over from the old Twitter days when it was all left wing. Not really sure what's going on there. But I will say it's very, very curious that they're killing a lot of people's reach right before the primaries. That rubs me the wrong way. That to me feels intentional. Is it election interference? I don't know. But to me, it feels that way for sure.
Well, law is not what is, it's what's always becoming. So if the Supreme Court were to speak upon that, I think there is a case that could be made every seminal case has its first case. So to me, it smells like election fraud. It's no different than a TV saying they're not going to like give equal time to Democrats or Republicans. It's more difficult to track, but it doesn't mean that doesn't exist. And that I would argue that's even makes it more sinister and in need of being addressed.
Exactly.
In fact, one of the most seminal cases about free speech was March versus Alabama, where there's a company town that said, well, you can't protest because this is private property. It's a private company. We've heard this before. And the Supreme Court said, no, you stir up the public space. We're not going to let you do that. You basically are the public space. So no, you don't get to have this thing where you get the sweet but not the bitter. That's not how this rolls. And I would say that Elon has talked about making X the everything app. Well, to me, that sounds like a public utility. That sounds like Marsh versus Alabama times 1,000. So yeah. At some point, maybe you can't really regulate X, I think, without maybe destroying it, but it should at least have some type of guidelines for, no, you can't. If certain people with certain views magically find their reach being manipulated, that creates a prima facie case that there's some type of manipulation. Everyone's going to always feel that they're not getting the reach they deserve, no matter what. But when it's so blatant, comes a point where it's like, no, I'm not simply unhappy and I'm not Napoleon Bonaparte. It's like, no, there's some manipulation here. I've seen it. I've seen likes that I've liked disappear. Actually, I've seen people that I swore I was following. I've actually unfollowed them, and I didn't do that. My account did, but these little games have to end, I think, one way or another.
Yeah. And I think a part of it too is because of all the money and advertising that's involved, where mm-hmm. he has to make a certain amount of profit in order to be able to keep the company running. And so if you have all these big advertisers that threaten to pull out unless they do a little censorship, I think that's causing a lot of issues as well.
Mm-hmm. Tyler, how is your family now in terms of your politics and your campaign? Were they supportive when you were going through all the J6 stuff? Are they supportive of your campaign today?
It was really difficult for my friends and family through the whole J6 experience. I was terrified that my mom and dad were going to have heart attacks on a daily basis. It was horrible. And but they supported me through it. You know, even though we disagree on a lot of things, and even though they don't necessarily support the fact that I even went to go and protest to begin with, they still support me as a person because I'm their son. Other family members still support me because I'm family. And some friends of mine lost a lot of them. A lot of them were like, I don't want the fire. But a lot of them stood by me because we're friends. So even though we disagree or we have different views, they still support me, and it's been huge. And it's the same thing for my campaign. Again, it's difficult. It's especially difficult for your loved ones when you're trying to run and do all these things and you can't spend time with them. And then you have all of the different attacks and then the slander that's going on behind the scenes and then the bad media. It's difficult. I will say it is absolutely difficult. Running for office, not easy, folks. It is harder. Running for office is harder than being in prison, quite honestly. Like being in prison was more enjoyable on a daily basis than trying to run for the seats. And that's saying something. I was in a room with 10 illegal alien cartel members from South America, all right, who joked around about the people that they've done things to back in Mexico. And running for office is more difficult than dealing with that. And it's hard on my family, but I'm very happy to have their support, their love, and, you know, it's made all the difference for me.
Yep. I think the extension, maybe politics is an extension of war sometimes, but I'm good that you're having great attitude. And, you know, they did toughen you up, I think, a lot with January 6th. I think they made a lot of strong people that way. And I'm glad you're doing it. I'm glad you have a Marine mindset of just like attack. Do you have a good campaign manager, or can I ask about that?
Do I have a campaign manager?
Yeah.
Well, I have a communications director, shout out. But I don't have an official like campaign manager. I'm doing most of that myself. But I talk to a lot of people. I do a lot of research. And one of the things that I've learned when I ran my business, I ran a small IT MSP, a company that basically helped businesses and people with their computers and all this different kind of stuff. When I first got started, I didn't know anything about marketing or advertising. I knew some about sales and some about technology, but that was it. And so the biggest thing I've learned is A, to be able to how to research and get that information, and B, to put good people in positions to do the things you can't do. And so I have that right now. I have a great team behind me now. No official campaign manager yet, mainly because they are very expensive in order to have and cost thousands of dollars. But if there's anyone who wants to be a campaign manager, who would be a reasonable fee, who wants to help out, I'm all ears. But until then, I am running it primarily myself.
So what kind of media are you able to access? Have you been getting interviews? You're doing one podcast. Are you doing other podcasts? How are you getting the word out?
It is very difficult to break through the media blockade. For every interview that I do, my opponents do 10 when it comes to the mass media, to Fox, CNN, and all these other places, where like some of my opponents even get like primetime speaking slots on all these different stations. And then they pretend I don't exist. Or where I go to a candidate, basically debate, and I rock it. I am two votes away from being the number one guy in the straw poll afterwards, and they don't report on it at all. And then at a different event where I don't do so well, because I call it Ford influence, and because they limited of who was and who wasn't not able to vote, I didn't do as well in that poll, and then they published that one. So the media, it's dang near impossible to get anywhere with. Everything has been online and in person. That has been the only way to get the word out. So like podcasts, your podcast, thank you for having me on. A number of other podcasts I've been on, I think I've been on like 6 or 7 in the past week or so, which is great. And then I've got events every day this week. I'm going to an event. I'm doing something. I'm doing something tomorrow, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm going to be in Bluffton tomorrow. I'm going to be in Charleston, I think, Monday. Back in Okotie Tuesday, Beaufort Wednesday, all these different places. So that's the only thing I can do is talk to friendly podcasters like yourself and talk to people in real life, because all the other media blacked me out.
Yeah, I've had friends who've run for office and, they report 50 years ago, similar kind of stuff. One person ran for governor in the state of Georgia, and on election night, they didn't even bother to report, well, at least one of the news stations in Georgia didn't even list him as one of the candidates who was on the ballot and received votes. they wouldn't even list his name to tell the world that he'd failed, that he'd lost, which is really quite remarkable. The level of media discipline and control that some people can exert if you're the wrong kind of candidate, who've got the wrong kind of message. Have you been in touch with James Edwards? Have you gone in the political cesspool yet?
I don't believe that I have. James Edwards with what was the name of the
podcast? The Political Cesspool. I'll put you in touch with him because he's got a lot of listeners and followers in South Carolina. He's actually done events in South Carolina, so he might be able to hook you up with some good contacts in your home state. So once we're done with this, let me get your email and I'll write an introductory email to James and see if we can get you guys talking.
Perfect. That means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, I can't go into all the details, but I've been on some kind of mainstream and also more dissident campaigns and it involved a lot of good cardio with like door hangers and all that and running around. So it is kind of like war. It's constant marching. I was up like in the morning helping people get elected by marching through like suburbia, and it was fun, but definitely exhausting.
Oh yeah. No, and that's what you got to do. You have to knock every door, put flyers everywhere, hundreds of thousands of them. You got to reach all the people that show up for primaries. But one thing that's really interesting that we haven't really touched on yet is the fact that this is going to be one of the lowest turnout elections ever. Already June 9th, which is the primary date right now, it's already shaking up to be very, very, very low turnout. Less than 10% of Republican voters will vote in the primary. But it'll be even worse because with the redistricting, they're talking about bumping back only the House primaries for South Carolina back to August 11th. And so nobody will show up except for people that are going specifically for the House. And so we might see as few as 30,000 votes total in the entirety of the election for this primary, potentially, depending on how redistricting shapes out. And so reaching those voters, if we even get like 10% of the youth all show up and vote for me, I could win this thing. I could dominate this in a landslide simply because so few people are going to turn up. So, I mean, like, this is just a very unique time right now in South Carolina.
Well, that's actually very encouraging because the truth is that in democracies, it's not the majority that rules. It's the majority of people who vote that rule. If people are disengaged, if they're confused about when to vote, that actually empowers organized, committed minorities to exercise some political power. And so that's part of the way that we win. So I'm very, very excited. I'm just running through all the names in my head of people I know in South Carolina that we should put you in touch with, because frankly, I think a lot of them would be delighted to hear that you're out there, and it might actually give them a reason to go to the polls this time.
Yes, I hope so. That would be huge. And it's another thing too, because I phone call a lot of people, a lot of potential donors, and I talk to them, and a lot of them are saying things like, I wish I knew about you a month ago. I would have donated sooner. A lot of people just haven't even heard of me that I am even running right now. And so, yeah, please help me get the word out. That means a lot. Please and thank you. That's huge.
Yeah, there's some other people we can probably get you in contact with who have some experience of stuff, including fundraising, but I'll talk to you later about that. But this is very good to hear, and I actually did a book review of this book called The Moderate Majority, which I call The Cringe Majority, where the author was trying to basically get whisper to the left to simmer down and just go back to a slow boil of the country's, you know, gradually declining. You're reading between the lines, of course. And his whole thing was like, well, most people are basically kind of inert and center right, but that's because they've been told, hey, hello. But the big thing that he didn't account for when he's talking, he saw only three things. He saw the candidates, the party apparatus, and the voters. And that's stupid because the voters are, there's high agency voters. There's also volunteers and staffers. And we have the best staffers, like you said earlier, like 40% are pretty listening to all the cool stuff they aren't supposed to listen to. Well, I think it's actually higher. I've heard like Mark Levin has cried tears about this. There's been other people who have kind of lost it and complained about it. And it's pretty high. It's like well over half. Probably more, and that's only going to rise. It's not going to decrease anytime soon. And so we have the most motivated people, the most energetic people. So the only thing that's keeping them back is a fear of doxing. But if we can get more people hooked up to your campaign too, that'd be great. Because I'm pretty sure it's a very good way to build your own little both movement resume and also a broader political resume. And I do recommend that people volunteer either on your campaign or a local campaign that they think is going to be fun and worthwhile.
Yes, exactly. And also as an added benefit for anyone that wants to work for my campaign, it seems that my opponents are repeatedly poaching my volunteers with $25 an hour plus job offers. So if you're looking for a job, come volunteer for my campaign. And within a month, you'll have a paid position with one of my opponents. That's where we're at. So, but no, we're building a team. We got a lot of great people. People that have turned down those offers even because they believe in what we're trying to do so much. So yes, that is amazing. There's so much support out there.
Yeah, it might be $25 an hour today, but in the future it's going to be zero because this is a sinking ship. They need to understand they're being bribed to jump upon a sinking ship. They're like it was very bizarre after, you know, the Iran war kicked off, is like all these people jumped on this sinking ship. Usually the rats go the other direction, but they jumped on because they had some short-term inducement. And then a few weeks later, it turned out that their Israeli handlers were not paying them the money that they were owed. I don't have all the details here, but these influencers were actually suing their handler for not paying the money in a contract.
Wow.
They're already, this is a sinking ship. And they're already breaching contracts. And yeah, like this whole thing is not tenable. Within 10 years, it's going to be gone. It's going to be like communism withering away as the Soviet Union fell.
Exactly.
So Tyler, we're coming up at the end of our time. So we got about 5 minutes left. So would you like to just wrap up and leave people with a sense of what you stand for, where you're going, and how they can find out about your campaign and support it?
Yes. So the biggest thing is that I am literally the only person in this race that is America first. I am the only person in this race that opposes our entry into foreign wars. Today at the candidate forum, I was literally the only person that said we shouldn't give money to Africa and the Middle East. The only person that said we need to cut foreign aid. What? Why are we funding every country on earth and then bombing them afterwards? It's insane. I want to bring the money home. I want to bring the troops home. Get us out of foreign wars. Get us out of this foreign interest. Cut out the corruption. Cut out the underbelly of the beast. Get rid of it. The Epstein class. All of it. Get them out. And then more than anything, I am a fighter for the low country and for our people, the American people. And so with that, with my experience as a Marine, with my experience being in federal prison for January 6th, with my experience running a business, I not only am a fighter for the low country, but I have the potential to be the winner and the winning fighter for the low country. And so if you want to support my campaign, you want to support my team, join my team, visit votetylersc.com, VOTETYLERSC.com, and let's win this thing, because we're not going to have another opportunity that's quite this good. So let's do it now. Let's commit. Let's fight. And win or lose, I will be running again in 2028.
You're going to be back. Win or lose, you're going to be back in 2028. That's the spirit. I really like to hear that.
It'll also generate good data for analysts to see how things are going up to have back-to-back races like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. David yes. loves to look at those sorts of numbers. Anyway, I've really enjoyed this. You popped up on my radar just a couple weeks ago. It's great to know that you're out there. You seem like you've got a good head on your shoulders, and you're working hard at this. So I'm very, very impressed. And I do want to put you in touch with people that I know in your state and elsewhere who might be interested in this. It's just a good sign. It's just a positive sign that we're seeing more people like you showing up on the scene. So I want to wrap up. I want to thank David for joining us. I want to thank you, Tyler, for joining us. I want to thank the people out there in the audience and the people who will be listening to this at Countercurrents and also on Substack, because our Substack audience is growing pretty dramatically. It's actually quite good. Next week, we have not yet scheduled somebody. I'm trying to get Keith Woods to come in and talk about his book, Ethnopolitics. If not next week, it'll happen soon. May 30th is when the Remigration Summit's happening in Portugal. It's going to be kind of hard to get any of my friends on a live stream because they're all going to be there. But the week after that, on the 6th, Rob Rundo is going to join us. That's something to look forward to. And in the meantime, just keep reading Countercurrents. Thank you so much.
Have a good day. Yeah.